Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
She's on the Mount Rushmore of Florida talk show hosts, and she's on your radio now.
Now.
It's the Joyce Kaufman Show on News Talk 850 WFTL.
We were here blowing out birthday cakes, riding our bikes, jumping in lakes, feeling butterflies on our first dates, and stealing our old man's beer. We were here back home in the home of the brave, but the brave ain't home, they're in Ocean Away, doing their job and keeping us safe while we were here. They were there fighting back on the front lines, strapping up their boots before the sunrise, keeping their mamas up all night in fear. They were there in the name of a hometown, of a last name that was passed down. Every day, every night, every moment we were here. They were there. Words not knowing their meaning, taking for granted all our freedoms in the land of the free. We were here bitching about minimum wage, splitting ourselves into red and blue states, but still sat down hot food on the plate. Yeah, while we were here, they were there fighting back on the front lines, strapping up their boots before the sunrise, keeping their mamas up all night in fear. The last name that was passed down. Every day, every night, every moment we...
Every moment that you were here and I was here, comfortable, sleeping in our beds, they were there. And that, my friends, is why I have so much respect for the men and women who serve in the United States military, like my friend Preston. I just really, I'm reminded every Friday of the tremendous sacrifice, not just made by the individuals who serve, but by their families. And we don't do enough to show them how grateful we really are. There's an honor flight that's going to be taking place that I wanted to remind everybody. The date is going to be May 18th, and the staging is going to be very early, like 3 o'clock in the morning. But if you have any questions and you want to find out more, just email me at joyceradio@gmail.com, and I will get you all of the information. The Stewart location, there's going to be 2 locations. One is going to be in Stewart, and I believe the other one is in Palm Beach. But I'll get all that information to you if you just email me at joyceradio@gmail.com. A veteran is someone who at some point in their life signed a blank check to the United States of America for up to and including my life. That's patriotism, and more people need to understand that. Unfortunately, we don't teach that. We don't do it at all. I was having a really tough moment, you know, early this morning at 4 o'clock, actually. I woke up and I was very, very distressed. Of course, I went to bed with the news that Israel had launched some attacks on Iran. Really, nobody seemed to know exactly how extensive they were. And it didn't feel as though it was as big as I would have thought. You know, it didn't sound that way. And I'm still really not sure. I mean, headlines don't tell me much. This is warfare, though. This is no longer one side and then the other side. This is open warfare between Iran and Israel. And I'm looking at headlines that say things like, Bibi did what he was told not to do. Now, let me just ask you a question. Who the hell would have the nerve to write a headline like that? What he was told to do? He's the elected legal leader of a nation. And the world warned him not to respond to an attack against his country? Give me a break. We have lost our way. That didn't come as a surprise to me. I don't care how much concern it causes Washington and London or anywhere else. The region is heading, if not already, in an all-out war. They attacked Israel on April 13th, which they claimed was a response to an Israeli strike on an Iranian consulate, which, by the way, was a target to take out some generals. And apparently, you know, the way Yahoo News put it this morning, Joe Biden talked down Benjamin Netanyahu from launching an immediate response. Does anybody on earth believe that Benjamin Netanyahu could be talked down by Joe Biden? Because I don't. Of course, it wasn't that he talked him down. He just threatened him. He said, "We won't support you and we won't join in any offense against Iran. Take the win," he told him. That's what I read in 9 different publications, that Joe Biden told Bibi Netanyahu to take the win from the very effective air defenses that stopped any real damage being done to Israel. But that's not what the War Cabinet was saying. They were in negotiations just to figure out when to strike, where to strike, and how hard to strike. I mean, the doves in the Israeli government, and of course there are, just like we have doves here, they were frantic. Oh, is it going to be an all-out war with Iran? Nothing. Now Tehran vowing, we're going to respond to any attack into our territory. Really? Okay. Bring it on. That's all. Mr. Netanyahu has now done what he was warned not to do, and I applaud him. Because for years, Iran and Israel have existed in a state of cold war, driven by Tehran's support for the enemies like Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas. But the events of early this morning, that's a war between two countries. And unlike other recent conflicts in the Middle East, a war between Iran and Israel pits two of the region's superpowers in direct conflict. And we'll see. We'll see. This is going to put this upcoming election here in the United States in a whole new light, isn't it? Because one candidate, the incumbent president, wants Bibi Netanyahu to stick his tail between his legs and walk away from the fight. And the other candidate, Donald Trump, will support him and back him as he takes out these wicked terrorists. That's going to be part of your decision making. It really is. I have to share something that my friend Alan Bergstein sent out this morning, but it's just so perfect. I don't know how else to frame it. He said, "Those haters of Israel, the United States, and everything else reeking of freedom and democracy, those whom you've seen on TV blocking roads and bridges and demonstrating at Columbia, should be of great concern to all of us. They are the street thugs of the Democrat Party who are giving us a preview of what they plan if, and surely when, Donald Trump wins the election on November 5th. They are practicing, honing their skills at terrorizing and tearing down this nation for when they are given the signal to swarm the streets, termite-like, to bring this nation to its knees. And they appear to be ready to be let loose. They will answer the bugle call to further disrupt a nation already confused, at one another's throats, angered by the influx of millions of illegals, the revolving criminal door policies, inflation, threats from our enemies, all caused and created by our inane, mindless, criminally corrupt current president. Be prepared to witness a more planned, violent, and coordinated repeat of the BLM 2020 riots that tore this nation apart. You know as sure as you breathe that it's coming. If the election is clean, honest, and lawful, Biden, who looks like he's a shoo-in Democrat candidate, will surely be the loser. and his loss will spark the violence. Just take into consideration, Biden refuses to even be led by the handle by the hand into a press conference with friendly reporters who are more than willing to softball him with questions previously submitted to the White House staff and who would play the game of pretending they understood his mumbling, undecipherable, incomprehensible responses. And as far as any debate with Trump, forget about it. His handlers, as well as all of us nobodies, are well aware that a Trump, in all his animated fury, would cause Joe to fall apart in front of hundreds of millions of viewers. In short, the Dems realize they've waited too long to replace him as the lead candidate. It's he and Kamala, sure bets to lose. So after their defeat, their frustrated supporters will drag the country down, destroy it, rather than live under a hated Trump presidency. They prefer doom over democracy. They will have at the ready all those components they utilized back when Trump took office in 2017. The women's marches, led by the likes of communist disruptors Tamika Mallory and Linda Sarsour, the street thugs of the Antifa movement, the BLM goons and others of their ilk who violently protested a fair election will be joined by the college crowd inspired by the pro-Hamas lunatics who are right now honing their skills at revolution to take down Trump and this country. We must be prepared for them and their actions. We must, through our organizations, warn them that their revolution will not be tolerated. Our law enforcement officials must indicate that any indication of unlawful criminal behavior that places our citizens in the way of harm will be put down with as much force as our laws allow. And it would not be a bad idea to bring this topic up when you're in the presence of and in conversation with a person or persons of liberal leanings. Tell them the truth. Let them know not to be a part of the movement to destroy our great nation. Warn them now. Let me take a quick break. I'll be right back. So maybe somebody out there in my listening audience can tell me why the unidentified man outside of the Manhattan Criminal Court building today poured gasoline on himself and abruptly set himself on fire in the middle of pedestrians and onlookers. According to a CNN reporter on the scene, his body burned for around a minute and a half, and ambulances were on the way with loud sirens being heard. The crowd of people around the building watched in shock and terror as the man sat down and took on the flames. Now, let me say this. We don't even know what was he trying to prove. What was he trying to accomplish? Is he pro-Trump or anti-Trump? And does he really believe that this will change anybody's mind about that? So you now have a totally charred human being in some, you know, hospital in New York. And I'm supposed to have some political feeling about it. Man, I'm getting so numb that a person can self-immolate outside of a Manhattan court where the Trump trial is underway, and I don't even flinch. I don't even have any feeling about it. I do have some feeling about the fact that all these onlookers just stood there and filmed it. My husband and I were talking about that just this morning. The people who stand around and film one person beating up another person, and their hands don't even shake. It's pretty scary how numb young people are. There was a video circulating a couple of days ago of some young thug slapping around a teacher, a female teacher, sitting in a chair, and he slaps her so hard, the sound was like, and they were numerous students just videotaping it. Their hands didn't even shake. They're used to it. And that's why when I read my friend Alan Bergstein's piece just before the break, He's absolutely right. What I'm seeing out there is a rehearsal for what this crazy leftist, not just students, but grown men and women, what they're planning for when Donald Trump wins. I'm not even going to say if he wins anymore, because if they don't cheat, he will win. Excuse me for the coughing. I apologize. But it's been awfully dry out here. I have a number of people commenting on how dry it's been. I don't know if there's fires somewhere or whatever in Broward County. But I do apologize. It's a live radio show, and I don't have a cough. So that's the nature of the beast, is you got to hear me cough. Now, one thing I can tell you is when I think about the variety of protesters that I've seen in the last couple of days, people shutting down bridges so that other people can't get to work, people taking over their employers' offices, like the Google employees, by the way, all of whom got fired, people taking over the offices of deans and presidents of colleges. Now, I have to admit, we did that in my day as well. We were nonviolent. It appears that these are, you know, so far been relatively nonviolent. Some of the street thugs have been kind of violent. But it's just, it's a rehearsal. You can see that. They're not going to stop. They're really like preparing an all-out war, a revolution. And we're the enemy, you and me. I know they like to tell us that it's all about Donald Trump and they have Trump derangement syndrome, but it's not. Really, they hate us. They certainly hate me. I can't speak for you, but I know that they hate me. I listened to some commentary over the last couple of days on other networks, and I get to see it online, where legitimate hosts on major cable news networks were literally applauding blatant, disgusting acts and racist acts as though it were okay. You know, as long as it's a black DA going after a former white president, apparently I'm just supposed to think that's neat and peachy keen. Turn that around and try to imagine if some, I don't know, Fox reporter or Fox anchor had gotten on the air and said the kinds of things about Barack Obama that they say about Donald Trump. How long do you think they would have lasted in their job? They wouldn't have lasted. But it's okay on MSLSD, it's okay on CNN to call Donald Trump a racist and to just say the most despicable things. And they do it over and over again. I'm looking at this NPR story where Yuri Berliner gets, you know, suspended or whatever they did to him for 5 days, no pay, because he dared to write an article on the Free Press saying that there's a lot of bias at NPR. And now you're beginning to see a lot of liberals coming out of the woodwork saying like, well, wait a second, there is a lot of bias at NPR. Some of us even like the fact that it's there, you know. So I saw a piece written by Andrew Sullivan on his Substack, and I thought, this is great. He said, I used to be quite fond of NPR. Each time I tune in, I'd be treated to calm, reassuring voices, occasional folk music, and high-minded liberalism. Yes, it was biased, but in a tolerable, occasionally hilarious way, still relaying facts about the world, occasionally even letting an always qualified conservative voice on its airwaves. Yes, we used to refer to All Things Considered as All Things Distorted, but it was a tease, not an indictment. And so when I read the New York Times story about the new NPR CEO, Catherine Marr, being criticized for past tweets that were embracing liberal causes, it felt like a blast of 90s nostalgia. Who running the MSM, mainstream media, doesn't embrace liberal causes? Ditto the Wall Street Journal's description that the tweets indicate liberal leanings, or the Washington Post, which wrote that Maher's tweets included calling Trump a deranged racist and a photo of her wearing a Biden hat or wistfully daydreaming about hanging out with Kamala Harris. Nothing to see here, nothing new, just a liberal CEO getting blasted by a far-right activist, in this case Chris Rufo, after an NPR stalwart, Uri Berliner, wrote a public critique of NPR, a tale as old as the mainstream media. But of course, the mainstream media is lying by obfuscating Mayer's politics and her tweets to make her views seem far milder than they are. She is not, in fact, a liberal of any kind. She is, as the tweets and the record prove, a near parody of an illiberal leftist dedicated to replacing open and free debate with benign censorship and to constructing a journalistic regime rooted not in the pursuit of truth, but in the urgent task of dismantling white supremacy. She tweeted, "White silence is complicity," in June of 2020. She went after James Bennett for platforming Tom Cotton. She's frustrated by the robustness of the First Amendment. She refers to her cis white mobility privilege. She chided Hillary for saying boy and girl. It's erasing language for non-binary people. She even self-flagellates over her own trans erasure. She is Titania McGrath, Andrew Doyle's comic Twitter parody of a deranged social justice warrior. Literally. Matt Taibbi, peace be upon him, has a delicious side-by-side comparison. And of course, this is precisely why Mayer was selected to be NPR's CEO, just as Claudine Gay was picked to run Harvard. Mayer's predecessor, John Lansing, was clear about the recent change in NPR's mission. When it comes to identifying and ending systemic racism, we can be agents of change. If you want to understand why NPR is cringy now, look no further than Catherine Maher. It's a religious cult. Journalists sound like revivalists. Her tweets perfectly define cultural overlords. And not just tweets like the typical ones you saw, but others. I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive, but it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. You know, they can't hide any of this stuff anymore. And that's why they're so mad. And that's why I'm telling you, you better get ready. It's finna rain. It's gonna rain. You better get your umbrella and your boots, because come November 5th, it's going to rain. All right, let me take a quick break. I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
You're not really trying to reassure people that Donald Trump understands what the odds are on the DNC and actually, unfortunately, a lot of state governments, how proficient they've become at cheating. So today, the Trump campaign and the RNC, the Republican National Committee, confirmed that they would be having in place an inspection team of over 100,000 lawyers and observers in the key swing states to observe and probably question the count of ballots this November. According to a statement released this morning, the Trump campaign and RNC boasted of the launch as the most extensive and monumental election integrity program in the nation's history. As per the reports, the program is said to be an important part of the RNC, what they call their commitment to ensuring transparency and fairness in the 2024 elections. RNC Chair Michael Whatley said, "Election integrity is the foundation of our democracy. Through this unprecedented program, we are mobilizing lawyers and volunteers who are committed to preserving the sanctity of our elections. They're going to, their so-called tactic of aggressive attorneys will monitor machine voting, ballot collection, voting on election day, the processing of mail-in ballots and unofficial audits, and recounting after election, and that will all be done under the name of the law. The press release announced that they would also have battleground state hotlines, which poll watchers and concerned voters can call to register any problems due to the elections. As per the announcement, lawyers will guide poll watchers through the appropriate election code and provide clarity on how various issues should be answered, resolved, or escalated. This system will be operational from the first day of early voting through Election Day and afterward, if necessary. Most states have rules in place for partisan monitoring at poll lines. Yeah, we see how well that worked the last time, right? But this is what needs to happen. This is the time where the Republicans better just wake up to the fact that in an evenly divided country, which is pretty much where we are today, he who is in control of the counting of ballots is the winner. And if they don't have a hand in it, which they didn't in 2020, not to any great extent, they'll lose again. They will lose again. And I'm telling you, you heard, I read Alan Bergstein's piece. There will be, I can't even articulate how frightening it is to think of the kind of unrest there will be in this country when Donald Trump wins. They're literally out there showing you with this Hamas nonsense, with this illegal immigration, pouring over our southern borders, young men of military age pouring over our borders, and they can't even have a hearing, a trial for Mayorkas. I don't care what you think about the 2020 election. I really don't. I don't care if you think it was stolen. I don't care if you think there's no chance it was stolen. Let's all agree to one thing. We need to do everything possible to ensure the integrity of this next election, because people are scared that there's going to be an enormous amount of cheating. I'm sure the Democrats are scared the Republicans are going to do it, and the Republicans are scared the Democrats are going to do it, and people like me are scared that they're just both so stupid that they'll do it in the full light of day. And then we're going to have a war on our hands. I think there's some movie out now called The Civil War that everybody's talking about. I don't know if the movie is about what might possibly happen in this modern age, or if it's actually about the Civil War that took place, because they've already made movies about the Civil War that took place. So I'm looking at all of the write-ups of this movie, Civil War movie. In a dystopian future America, a team of military embedded journalists races against time to reach Washington, D.C., before rebel factions descend upon the White House. Say what? Am I the only person who thinks that's really very, very scary? In the movie, director Alex Garland imagines a third-term president. There are no third-term presidents, are there? Ruling over a divided America, and follows the journalists driving through the war-torn countryside on a mission to land his final interview. I'm just really concerned about this. I think that you should be concerned. I guess that's what's so interesting to me, is that I've been hearing a lot about this movie and didn't have a clue until I looked today what it was about. Not at all. And yet it's about what I've been talking about in the beginning of this show. There are all kinds of rumblings happening out there in the public. People are nervous about the election. People have this Trump derangement syndrome. Joe Biden is falling apart in front of the world's eyes. And everybody's just kind of wandering around, doped up. We're going to vote on legalizing recreational marijuana in November. Has it ever occurred to the people in my listening audience that they are just trying to make us as dopey and stoned and out of it as they possibly can? Because, you see, if you're, you know, if you're hitting the bong and watching movies on your Netflix account, you're probably not going to pose much of a threat when they decide to do things like perhaps institute martial law. Now, you may say, Joyce, don't be like that. Don't. There's a conspiracy theories, Joyce. Yeah. That's what they told Noah when he was building an ark in the middle of the desert, that he was a conspiracy theorist. And then it rained. Well, I'm telling you, it's going to rain. And you really want to be prepared. So I'm glad that the RNC and the Trump campaign is putting together a team of legal beagles, legal eagles, as well as poll watchers being trained properly so that maybe we can have a fair election. The only problem with that is these people don't care if it's a fair election. If Donald Trump wins, they're going to mobilize. And you better have your boots on. You better have your umbrellas up. That's all I'm going to say. So some sad celebrity kind of news. Well, you know what? Derek's going to be coming on in the next segment, so I will ask him about it. Two really disturbing stories at the top, and then we'll see what else is happening in the world of celebrity news and entertainment. So don't forget, coming up after me is Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson, and then we're into the weekend. Hallelujah. Monday morning, Jen and Bill will be back at 6 a.m., Brian Kilmeade at 9, Dan Bongino at noon, and then, of course, me at 3 o'clock on Monday. But I have this one segment left with my son Derek from TMZ. Stay right where you are.
They say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But in the case of Derek Kaufman, the apple rolled all the way to L.A. The one thing Derek and his mother share in common, however, is the love for breaking news. TMZ is breaking news faster than the New York Times. So sit back and enjoy the news from Hollywood, as only the Kaufman family can bring it.
Well, it's a chance for me to catch up with my son, Derek, from TMZ. How you doing, kid?
I'm hanging in there. How's it going on your end? I hear you've been battling a little cough. We've got one in our house right now.
Oh, I tell you, ever since that vaccine, I can't seem to shake a cough. I have like the 1,000-day cough at this point, but we'll see.
Every cough makes me nervous now with you. You're my old mother in South Florida, so you got to tell me about every cough.
Oh, please stop it. Let me tell you something. I have, as usual, looking at TMZ before we came on, and they break a story about this guy setting himself on fire in front of the Trump trial in the Manhattan courtroom. And I'm looking at this. Now they've identified the guy, and guess where he's from?
Where's that?
Florida.
Where would you imagine? Where would you imagine? The guy came from your neck of the woods, and this is not all that surprising potentially to people who read lots of news stories about politics, because you guys are the center of the storm. But it's actually very, very sad. You know, he's been identified as a man named Maxwell Azzarello, and they say he arrived in New York at some point over the past week, walked into the park, was throwing pamphlets on the ground, and then just doused himself in some sort of accelerant and lit himself on fire. And, you know, this is shocking, and it's always political when you see a self-immolation. You remember these from the Vietnam War days. You would have the Buddhist monks who immolated themselves. It's to make a big statement, not just to sort of commit, you know, to kill yourself. It's doing it very publicly for a reason. And outside of the courthouse at Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial, and that's where it happened, you can connect the dots there.
But I can't connect the dots. Was he for the trial or against the trial?
My sense is it would be in opposition to the trial happening. I mean, I usually read these as what is going on right now is something I oppose, mm-hmm. and therefore I am going to do a loud sort of protest to get notice that I oppose this. So my sense would be that the person is opposed to it, but you're right, I don't know, and only Maxwell himself would know the reason.
Well, it might help if we knew what the pamphlets he threw on the ground were.
That would certainly shed a lot of light on things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as this story develops, there's going to be an investigation, because when this sort of thing happens in New York City, no less, it's a big deal in the news cycle. And you can even see in the photos of the immolation, you see pamphlets scattered around. So it shouldn't be hard to identify what he was doing or why he was doing it.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. And you probably watch more footage from people's cell phones than the average bear because of TMZ. That's how they get so many of these stories. And what bothers me and boggles my mind is the fact that people don't even, their hand's not even shaking. They're filming this guy on fire. They're not running towards him. Their hand's not shaking. They film people getting beat up or thrown on train tracks like it's no big deal.
It's remarkable. You know, this is the state of the world that we live in. I mean, there's, you know, video of this happening during a live telecast from CNN, where a CNN, you know, reporter, I believe it's Kim Coates, is just reporting on this as it's happening. And you can hear something in her earpiece, might have said the word fire, and she initially thinks it's a shooting going on in the park, but then learns that a man has immolated himself and they're trying to get cameras on it. You're right. You see someone come up with a fire extinguisher to try to help him, but most people are just trying to capture the footage. It's really emblematic of where we are.
Yeah, it is a little too much videotaping of horrendous events. I think we're numb to them. That's the problem. What's going on? First and foremost, the saddest thing I saw today was Mandisa died. I mean, what was she, in her 40s?
Yeah, you know, she was 47 years old. Mandisa was a huge star and a Grammy-winning singer after her days on American Idol. I remember when she came in ninth place, and it was during the height of American Idol when finishers in the top 10 mm-hmm. were all very, very famous because this show was doing bananas numbers. It was a very big cultural sensation at the time, and she was one of the breakout stars, and she went on to have a gospel career where she won a Grammy in 2014. She did pass away at 47. Now, she is talked about her struggles with contemplating suicide in the past, so it's unclear exactly. We'll probably know more as this story develops, but just a very sad end for someone who is quite young, 47 years old.
Yeah, that song, Overcomer, is one of my favorite songs. We sing it at church, but, you know, how did you guys find out? Has it been confirmed by the family? I mean, she didn't have any health problems that anybody knew about, did she?
No health problems. Her father confirmed the death and said it was unexpected, a total shock to the family. There were no known health issues that would cause her to pass. Mm-hmm. And so then people start to piece together that she's talked about suicide. It's unclear, as I want to emphasize, what the cause was here, but the death itself has been confirmed by her family.
Oh, wow. And now the big question, I mean, obviously Taylor Swift, who says that she's a legend and compares herself to Stevie Nicks, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but hey, you know, if you don't have an ego that size, you probably wouldn't be as successful as she is. But now, is her latest song sort of a cry for help? Does she have a drinking problem?
Yeah, this is what's interesting. Everyone is going to be analyzing Tortured Poets Department, her new album, and looking for clues about her life. Obviously, one of the big stories that came out is that she's got some choice words for Kim Kardashian, named a song with the letters spelling out Kim, and it's sort of a reference to her beef with her from long ago. But the one that really jumped out was she may have a problem, or had a problem, because she has reference to lyrics in this song called Fortnite, where she says, I was supposed to be sent away. They forgot to come and get me. I was a functioning alcoholic till nobody noticed my new aesthetic. And people are saying, oh, I see her in a lot of pictures with drinks in her hand. I know that she gave up alcohol before her Eras tour. Was this because there was a problem? Now, it does seem like she does still drink socially, so maybe it's not something she doesn't have under control. But it's a concern when someone this big mentions lyrics that sort of confessional, or at least sound confessional.
Yeah, and it's a big problem for these superstars, especially the ones that have been in the public limelight since they were young. They struggle with addictive behaviors. So I certainly, you know, I hope against hope, because she's such a role model to all these little girls, you know.
Absolutely, but as famous as Taylor Swift is, it's got to be hard to move through the world and sort of manage mm-hmm. that level of celebrity. I mean, this is a woman who has now kind of exceeded Madonna in ways. She is just an absolute global sensation, the biggest music star out there. She's in seemingly a happy relationship now with Travis Kelce, but she has a road littered with exes that she obviously has hard feelings about and writes about often. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I hope she's not dealing with too many issues like this, but it is interesting that people will pore over all the lyrics. So get ready for more of this.
I will. And finally, did you think it's really tacky for the entire Kennedy family to get out there and endorse Joe Biden when RFK Jr. is running? I just like, why didn't they just stay quiet?
Well, you know, this is a long-running family feud. You know, RFK Jr. stands alone outside of the rest of the family, which is proudly Democratic. You know, mm-hmm. Camelot and all that stuff. They are, you know, other than the Clintons, I guess, in the modern era, they are the Democratic family, and they've got all this history steeped in American tradition. And so they're trying to distance themselves from RFK Jr. because this run poses mm-hmm. a significant threat to both of the candidates running. It's unclear which way it'll cut, but he's a real threat. He's out there and he's polling quite well. Yeah. So they want to make a push for Joe Biden because they're worried about their cousin or brother, you know, messing up the election.
Yeah, well, that's Trump's going to win, Derek. You could take that to the bank. Anyway, thank you for coming on. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right. Have a good weekend.
All right. You too. And that does it for me. I thank you for your time this time until next time. And my plan is to be back here on Monday at 3:00, if it be his will and he delays his coming. Because what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Stay safe this weekend. God bless you, God bless Israel, and God bless the United States of America. See you Monday.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.